This week at Reading FC had it all. If by all you mean Dai Young, your owner, doing sprints down the touchline after a game, Andy Carroll, a former England and Liverpool striker, making his debut, and a points deduction, and of course, a 1-1 draw with Nottingham Forest, probably the least mad thing that happened this week at Reading FC. Welcome to the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 279. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me this week to talk about, well, I think there's enough to talk about. It's Ben Thomas. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. I'm just, I'm quite pleased that we've actually got a game to talk about, really, after this week. It's it's been bonkers, even by our standards, and topped off with that just bizarre running race, which I guess we'll talk about later on. But yeah, it's good to be back on.
Yeah, it's good as well. I mean, I suppose we're all fearing it as 1-0 goes in early, but probably fearing that we're going to have to do a show on a defeat, kind of almost embodying the problems at the club and how, you know, the 1-0 defeat showed the why Reading are heading in the wrong direction. But I actually think that there was a pretty decent fight back put in by Reading, which we'll get stuck into in the recap. And then later on, we will, of course, be talking a little bit about that points deduction, which was handed out in the week. We'll be answering your questions in the mailbag, keeping you up to date with what's going on in the other teams at Reading FC, and looking ahead to a game on the telly on Tuesday night, which is a bit of a luxury. So let's get into that now with the recap. And before I do that, actually, looking back at my script, big thanks as always to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, ZCZ Films.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, where to begin with this one? 1-1 it finished between Reading and Nottingham Forest. It didn't take long for there to be some action. Forest taking the lead only after about 3 minutes. And typically when you look at these teams these days, you look at the Championship team, Ben, and think, oh, there's a couple of players I've not really heard out of that. Zinchenko, never heard of him. He's the one who scores, which I guess probably belies my ignorance. But this was, I mean, to get into just this goal in particular, not a particularly good goal for Reading to concede. Moore and Scott Dan don't really do very much. Both of them kind of put in a kind of, I described in my player ratings, I described Liam Moore's tackle as the classic Liam Moore non-tackle tackle, and Scott Dan was school child kind of flinch as the ball's coming in, and Josh Laurent doesn't really do great either. And as a goal, it wasn't a great start, and it's the second time we conceded early on in a row now.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I just laughed when the goal went in because it was kind of like the spirit of the time, really, in terms of where we're at and where we have been for the, kind of the last week, really. It wasn't good defending, and those two were kind of everywhere and nowhere for that goal, really. And it was just the worst possible start. And from that point, it could have gone either way, really, in terms of the floodgates could have opened, could have, you know, massively choked on it, or we could have kind of got back into the game. And I felt, credit to the players and you know, the fans to some extent, because, you know, after, like, we'll talk about it a lot, but after the week we've had, to go 1-0 down inside 3-4 minutes at home to a team that, you know, to be blunt, on paper, I feel we should have been beaten, and we should have beaten yesterday. It could have been a horrific turn of events, but luckily, you know, the players kind of dug in, got themselves back into the game, and there was some all right performances, really. I think it's very, very telling, isn't it, that, you know, we're in a situation where we huffed and puffed, and, you know, there was some good parts to our play, you know, having kind of Yeardom and Bubba higher up left us a little bit exposed to some extent, but also allowed us to attack down those wings a little bit more than maybe in previous games we haven't been able to. But it comes back to that age-old problem that we've talked time and again. The final third, it just all falls apart, really. I thought Puskas was a little bit guilty of kind of, you know, on his heels yesterday and not probably showing the running that we've seen previously. I thought he was a lot better when Andy Carroll, you know, came on, and we had that two up top, which, you know, a lot of fans have been clamouring for, and rightly so. But yeah, it was kind of a strange performance, really. We didn't really cement ourselves in the game. We didn't really have many chances, but kind of controlled it quite well in the first half. Second half, you know, a little bit better. Obviously, got the goal through Scott Dan and some nice work from Carroll. But yeah, it was just all a bit odd, really. I think, you know, Forest were incredibly well organised, and an absolute credit to them, because the start of the season that they had was dreadful, absolutely dreadful. And since they've, you know, replaced the manager, Cooper's come in, he's done a fantastic job of them, and they're kind of looking up rather than down now. But I left the game feeling quite frustrated, because I just felt that is a game, you know, particularly at home, that we should have been winning.
Yeah, I suppose for me, that's the feeling of leaving the game. I was really hoping for, with 6 points gone, I was really hoping to wipe half of that out in this game. And the feeling of, if we had a nicked a late winner or something like that, the euphoria around the stadium would have been really something, and really, really memorable. And that's, you know, I was chasing that feeling late on. And after that goal, I think you're right, we did come back into the game pretty well. There was a goal mouth scramble after Danny Drinkwater had a shot. We did get the goal. John Swift's corner, kind of, you know, a low corner. I think Cowell went for it, kind of took the defender away. Scott Dan with a nice finish, a nice little training ground move. We've seen Reading try a lot of those in the last sort of, you know, couple of, almost basically since Paunovic has come in. He has been very inventive with his training ground moves, and this one's come off. We've seen a couple others come off, to be fair, as well. And then, yeah, I mean, for that period, it did feel like Reading were on top, weren't they? And generally speaking, I mean, this Forest team has been the third best team in the Championship since Steve Cooper's arrival. They're not, they're not the team that were at the start of the season. And so I guess it's that debate, is it? Is it 1 point gained or 2 point lost? And I suppose I'm going to have to sit on the fence on it, because I can't quite work out where it is, because we had at the end of the game, they had some chances to win it.
Yeah, I think it's so difficult, because, you know, you looked at the team sheet and you thought, okay, well, we've got some attacking players there, but no one really, really did that. You know, the kind of the players that did attack kind of wasn't really their role to do that, you know, generally. So as I said, you know, Yeardom and Bubba were kind of getting forward a little bit, but, you know, Ajari was kind of just out of the game. Loren was sort of everywhere and nowhere really. Swift was kind of dropping, having this bizarre thing where he was kind of switching with Drinkwater quite a lot, and it just didn't really flow particularly well. And we, you know, sounds obvious because, well, sounds a bit ridiculous because we were, you know, 1-0 down within sort of 4 or 5 minutes, but we never really looked in danger of losing the game. I did kind of feel that we would get back into it. But, you know, it's that situation where it would have been great to kind of to get 50% of the points we'd lost back yesterday. And it just didn't really happen. You know, Jack Colback was phenomenal yesterday, absolutely phenomenal, regardless of his past and whatever.
Is that regardless of his terrible, terrible dive in front of the East Medeski stand at the end? I don't know if you noticed that one.
100%. I mean, he's the kind of player that if he's playing for you, you love him. You absolutely love him, you know. But you know, he plays against you and you hate him. You hate everything he does. you know, but he marked Swift out of the game yesterday. He was absolutely brilliant. And it's one of those things that we've, you know, we've consistently lacked at this club is an absolute out and out central defensive midfield player. You know, we haven't had one of those for years and years and years. And we've tried lots of different players in those positions, two players, you know, sometimes in those positions. Particularly with last year, with the kind of pivot with Runimota and Lauren. But, you know, he was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal yesterday, I felt. And I spent a lot of time just watching him and the kind of things that he was doing, really. But, yeah, it is a game. You know, you could have been looking at the end of this week, gone, right, we've got the 6 points back. You know, all being well on Tuesday, we'll win. But, you know, it was frustrating. I did find myself getting frustrated in parts. And I felt that Carroll coming on when he did was a good thing. I just felt it should have been earlier.
About 35 minutes left, wasn't it? And before we get on to Carroll, I do want to say, because that callback point, I gave Swift a 5 in the player ratings because I felt like he did end up running down a lot of dead ends and was kind of shoved off the ball a little too easy. It was kind of callback who was doing, he did do a job on him, didn't he?
Oh, 100%. And he was very good. And like, as I said earlier, you know, Forest were very well organised, and you know, they had a really good chance towards the end. If Graben hadn't been as selfish as he could have been with that probably could have been a win for them. But I don't know. It was a game there for the taking, and the players, to me as a whole, as an attacking unit, just didn't really step up to that. You know, there were some good performances. You know, Tom Harms was fantastic. You know, he was very, very good. I felt, you know, second half Puskas was a lot better than the first. Dan obviously popping up with a goal after the shaky start for the goal that he conceded. So there were some positives, but it just, again, it just doesn't, it's not flowing really well at the moment. And it wasn't a game that you looked at and thought, right, these guys have had 2 weeks on the training pitch. That's what it looked like to me anyway. You know, that said, it is a point, it's another point back on the road. So we're down to 5 to claw back now. But, you know, had we lost that game, I think it would have ended in an absolute riot, I think, at the Madstead Select Carlisle Stadium even. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, another side note, I say the referee was awful. I wasn't happy with his performance at all, which did kind of judder the game a little bit. And yeah, I know what you mean about the attacking fluidity. I was explaining to my mate who came with me and my dad, who tends to be a Man United fan, and I said to him, like, I feel like we're a really bad Premier League team in the sense that the things that we try and do, some of the balls, some of the flicks around the corner, some of the movement, it is what a Premier League team would do, but we don't execute it very well. We're not good at it. So maybe it is a case of doing something a bit simpler or whatever, making it work in that sense. And, you know, with that, let's talk about the man who came on. The thing is, 60 minutes is basically bang on the hour mark. Andy Carroll, because Puskas had to start. Jamari Clark picked up an injury over the international break, which gives me an opportunity to say my pointless stat of the week, which was that Jamari Clark's 2 goals at Birmingham a fortnight ago made him the youngest player, or the youngest substitute rather, to score twice in a Football League game since Harry Kane in 2011. That's absolutely pointless, but it's nonetheless a stat. So that meant that Puskas started, and I agree with Ben, had a decent game, not great, but not awful. I mean, especially by Puskas standards. And then Andy Carroll came on for the last half hour, and we saw a player who you get the sense of why he was a Premier League and international footballer, don't you? Because he's not just good in the air. He was good at his movement. He was good at, you know, controlling the ball and his touches round. And he put in, you know, one cross at one point, and you thought that was a very incredibly well technically executed cross, even if it didn't find its man. And he was a bit ropey and a bit wavy, particularly off the ball. I was worried that at one point he did probably lunge into a challenge late on, and I thought, God, there's a red card if you just move your foot up an inch or something. But there was, I think, in that half hour, there was more than enough to work with going forward, either as Carroll on his own or with Puskas or someone up front alongside him.
He's your best mate now, isn't he? After he shared your ratings. What did you call him? Scooby-Doo or Scrappy or something?
In the player ratings, I was basically, you know, it sounds awful to say this, but basically when you're writing these sort of things, sometimes you need to make it a bit interesting for yourself. And I decided to go down the route of associating Carroll's performance with a severe amount of dog puns, one of which I said he had a Scrappy-Doo approach to every refereeing decision. And then, yeah, Andy Carroll has tonight put that on his Instagram story. So if you're listening to this on Monday afternoon, go and have a look at Kent. I mean, all he's put a little Scooby-Doo gif on it as a little. So, I mean, it's just a sign, isn't it? You know, when you get put on the Tyler player ratings, people, these players take notice, don't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, I compared him to have an expression like a haunted pencil in the column. So hopefully we can get that back up on Monday. But yeah, I mean, I it's one of those things, isn't it? You kind of sat there and it probably sounds a bit tin pot and a bit kind of, you know, low expectations. But to have someone who once cost 35 million, you know, playing for us, even for the short term, it just blows my mind, really. And someone made the point earlier, you know, so obviously Danny Drinkwater was 30 million. But I just remember Andy Carroll going for that amount and thinking, how have they done that? Like, that's a lot of money for a player that's kind of, for want of a better word, not a superstar at that point, you know. And I obviously got the money in from Torres, didn't they, for Chelsea at the time. But, you know, it's just phenomenal to me that he's with us now. And yeah, you know, look, he came on yesterday. He has got a bit of ring rust. He doesn't look, you know, the full part yet, but he's got a presence. There's something about him. You can see why he played at the level that he's played. He obviously still wants to play football. Clearly, financially, he's fine. He's done. But there's still a hunger there that makes him want to be able to, you know, to play for a club and take part in the games. And to be fair to him, he hasn't had a club since sort of, you know, the summer when he was released. He's obviously keeping himself fit to be able to come on for 35 minutes in a game of that intensity in the league of this intensity is credit to him, really. You know, when we signed Dan, he wasn't quite there. Sort of similar with Drinkwater, he wasn't quite up to speed. But, you know, with Carroll, he's clearly got the hunger and he clearly wants to do something in the game still. So, you know, hats off to him for sort of coming down and sticking it around, really. I'm intrigued by it more than anything, though. It's more kind of intrigue than expectation because, you know, Puskas is Puskas and we've talked to death and about him and people have written thousands of column inches about him as well. Well, not thousands, but you know what I mean. We've spent a lot of time talking about him. And he just looked a different player when Carroll came on because he had that support. And I think, you know, that kind of big man, little man combo has worked well for us kind of many years ago. You think about Forster and Butler and that kind of ilk. So I'm intrigued by where this is going to go. And I'm hoping that Carroll starts the game sooner rather than later and we play that two up top because we'll look a different team when that happens. You know, clearly Forrest didn't really want to play against him. You know, they'd obviously picked up on the fanfare in the week, but you know, he was all right. He was all right apart from the tackle that you mentioned, which could have been a disaster. But look, you know, he's here till January. We know what we've got with him. He knows what he's coming into. It's nice for the fans to get excited about someone coming in. It's great to see a lot of people sort of cheering him on and kind of really getting excited about his presence. So, you know, it's given everyone a lift, I think, in a week that we desperately needed it. And hopefully the players will feed off that as well and we can do something with him and he can do something with us. But time will tell as to whether or not we're able to kind of play to his strengths. You know, start putting cross in the box is a key one, really, because that's not something we do as a team at the moment or haven't been doing as a team at the moment. But yeah, you know, look, he looked good. He kind of changed the game to some extent yesterday. And if he's able to do that quickly, you know, what's he going to be able to do in sort of 3, 4, 5 games time?
Well, that is the hope, isn't it? I mean, there's not many players I can remember getting a kind of almost a standing ovation. We've seen players get clapped as they go to warm up, and that's pretty standard. But as he came out to warm up at half time and got a good old clap then, didn't he? Which is pretty special to see. And yeah, I think, I mean, it's ironic in a way if we have our big man, little man, and our little man is George Puskas, because I'm not entirely sure he fits too much into that category. But I do agree. I do think that there is something to work with there. There's something that Pavlovic can harness. And you know, I think in terms of putting crosses in the box, Yeardon isn't the best crosser, but I think Rahman could put a ball in. I think Ajari or Swift, you know, these players, if they know what they're looking for, they can put a ball in. And if defenders are so worried about John Swift putting a ball in that they overload that side, then he'll breeze in through the middle. So we've got options at least. And it's not what Reading have had in the last few weeks because we've had so many injuries.
Think it'd be interesting how we adapt the set pieces as well, you know, in terms of how we move that forward.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talk about Swift putting the corners in and so forth, but he's got a target. You know, there's no point sticking those balls in the box if you've got Puskas there, you know, with all due respect to him, because he's not going to win against those, you know, those kind of centre halves that he's coming up against. So it's going to give us a different dimension. It's going to give teams playing us a bit more of a headache. Pardon the pun, but like, you know, we're going to move forward with that and hopefully we can get some good goals out of it.
Yeah, there was actually one incident where we did do a nice little knockdown. I think it fell to John Swift. I was at the wrong end of the ground to really know what happened, but I need to go back and watch the highlights just to really look like a bit of a hash up from Swift to take that chance for. But I don't want to lay it into him, and I've not had the chance yet to go back and watch the extended highlights. But I will say before we go into the mailbag that we are now 7 unbeaten in home games versus Nottingham Forest. We've won 5 of those games, and actually overall we're 6 unbeaten. So we've got a bit of a run going against Forest. Almost made it 3 points on the weekend. Let's now hear from Veljko Paunovic before we go into the mailbag.
I think not the result we wanted, but I think the performance was very good, except how we started the first half and the second half. I think this is something we have to look at and fix immediately, because we can't concede that quickly. We can't give our opponents the edge at the beginning of the both halves. But other than that, I think that the team showed an amazing spirit, an amazing performance, fitness-wise and also quality-wise. So a lot of positives. We fought back in the first half. We ended up the first half in their box, which we always want to set the tone starting going into the second half. And I think second half also was good. We scored on set piece. And we had few very, very good chances. I think the moment when we switched the formation and when Andy Carroll came on the field was a big boost and lift for the team and definitely for our fans. So first time playing with him and Puskás together, I think it was very positive. We created I think we were a different team in terms of the composure and the expectations that we had between us. We raised the level.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Let's keep this bandwagon going for just a little bit longer, because in the mailbag, which you can always get involved in with the Tilehurstend at gmail.com or the Facebook. And of course, we always put out the Twitter question to you guys before we record the show. Sean Burgess has done that this week. He said, how many goals will Andy Carroll score before mid-January when he inevitably signs for Liverpool on a free? I disagree. I think he's going to sign for Chelsea because they've got no fit strikers. But he's saying he's setting the bar over under 9 goals. So between now and mid-January, I have to briefly check how many games we've got. But there's actually quite a few. I mean, we've got obviously Tuesday night games and stuff like that coming up. An FA Cup game in there as well. In December alone, we've got about 6 games or 5 games even. So, you know, he's got a good chance of about 8 or 9 games he could be playing. Potentially a bit more than that. So I'd say in that time, I mean, if he scores 3, I will be delighted. Let's put it at that. I think I'm going to go for 3.
I'd love the idea that now that he's kind of, you know, shared your ratings, that he's listening to this now. So I'd love to know if he's listening, how many goals does he think he's going to score, really? I mean, yeah, I'd take anything, to be honest. I mean, we need strikers to score goals. We've had Jamari Clark and that's it this season. So, like, you know, it would be great if we could actually have out-and-out strikers scoring goals for us. I think his contribution is going to be more than goals, personally. I think, as I said earlier, the lift that he's given everyone and the kind of excitement around it, but also the link-up play that he showed yesterday and he'll be able to continue moving forward with will be kind of potentially, well, not more valuable, but as part of the package that we're getting with him. But yeah, I mean, God, I'd go 3, 4, 5, anything really, to be honest. I just can't wait for the first goal to go in when he does it. I mean, I think he will definitely score. I don't think we're going to be in a situation where we're talking Puskás here, but you know, I think he's definitely good for a goal or two, and I think it will be sooner rather than later. I think it will all depend on kind of the first game that he starts, really. You know, I'm not sure if his stats coming on to a game in terms of the goals scored when he comes on as a sub, but you know, in terms of him starting games will be the biggest tell in terms of how many goals he scores.
Yeah, I was actually, as he is now an official friend of the show, I was tempted to call the podcast Andy Carroll is a really good guy. Just every mention to be, oh, he's a really good guy, just in case he is listening. But, you know, if he is, he can definitely answer that question. But dear God, do not do it in a betting context, because then he'll get banned and then that'll be the 2 months done. Because he's definitely not allowed to do that. Scottish Poet saying, in their respective last 15 games, which of our strikers has the better record? With a big guy, little guy, Puskás and Carroll, will they bring out the best in both of them? As you know, we kind of discussed that. I will say that I'm not sure how Puskás fits into the kind of little guy notion with that, but if Carroll can, like I was saying with Swift, if he can draw in defenders, if he can be the player to hit with long balls and stuff like that, then any striker is going to benefit from that next to him. And Puskás still has a good shot on him. There was actually one moment in the game, I'll credit Puskás, saying that he kind of got a little bit of an edge on a player, and I think he's about a good 18 yards away, sort of corner of the box, and he had a go and he hit it and it was a good connection and it was on target and it was saved. And you know, Puskás had 4 shots on the weekend, and that's as many as anyone else on the pitch, and I think that deserves a little bit of credit. And if he can just, you know, keep having a go, you know, keep throwing it at the wall, kind of as the saying goes, one of it will stick, and maybe that's what sort of Carroll can help him with.
Puskás is, like, you know, the most confident, unconfident player I've ever seen, really, for us, because he, you know, like you said, he is still giving it a go. He's not, his head's not dropping, and he has been ploughing that furrow on his own for weeks and weeks and weeks, and times when he's hardly had a touch of the ball. You know, Sim pulled up a stat the other week, didn't he, about the amount of chances he's actually had in terms of creation, and it's absolutely minimal. So it's not like he's Yeah, okay, there's been a few high-profile misses, but generally speaking, he's not been given the opportunities to kind of get the ball to his feet and have a shot off. And there were times yesterday when he did that, as you say. So I think fair play to him. The confidence level that he's showing on what is essentially a horrific run of form, it needs to be applauded. You know, he's clearly not listening to any of our fans that are dead against him at the moment, which is good. I like him. I've always been a fan of Puskás. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But I just think he needs all the support that he can get. And in there somewhere is a very good player. And I hope that he rediscovers that with us. If it's not, then he'll go on somewhere else and do that. But he's a nice guy. You know, he does work hard. He gives it the best that he possibly can in very difficult circumstances. And I think once he scores the goal, everyone's going to be sort of very relieved and very pleased for him.
Yeah, I'll definitely be pleased for him. I'll disagree. I don't think there is a very good player in there myself. But ultimately, you know, we spent so much time this. We must have spoken about Puskás more than any other player this season. And perhaps from my point of view, I'm just kind of past the sense of anger with it. Maybe that'll change if we lose 4-0 on Tuesday and he's terrible. But for
you're
now,
you're over it.
Yeah, it is.
It's because he hasn't shared any ratings. That's why you're not interested.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if he shared the ratings of the last like 3 months, then I'm not sure we'd been doing himself any favours, to be fair.
But, that is true.
But yeah, I just think that it's quite clear that if we have for the second half of the season Zhao, Meite and Carroll and Jamari Clark, then he's basically going to be the fourth choice striker. And yes, you know, the money argument and everything, we've gone over it so many times. For me now, it's just the fact that he is, you know, for Saturday, he was the striker and he had a go and he didn't get it in. So I'm just kind of saying, you know, that's it. It's almost we have sort of torn the pieces off of his, you know, place in Reading's history. And I guess we'll get onto the points deduction in a bit. There's a bit more of that. Matt Williams, the next question, he says, if all centre halves are fit, who do you select? He thought Tom Holmes did a good job after Liam Moore went off and we switched to a 4-4-2 on Saturday. I will say that I kind of raised this at the start of the show that I'm not too sure about Moore and Dan as a partnership. I've actually, Scott Dan's defending, generally speaking, I found a bit average since he's come down. Hopefully it's a fitness case or just getting back up to speed. So he didn't really play much last season, did he? Liam Moore is Liam Moore. You know what you're going to get. Holmes, you know, I think Holmes is a better right back. I'm generally, last season he was really good at right back, mostly speaking. This season, I think he's not been great at centre back, but I thought on Saturday played really well. He got up and down the pitch. He's, you know, technically speaking, I think as an athlete, just generally speaking, he is a top class athlete. So I'd almost be tempted to, you know, I'm sure that the amount of quality that you've got in Moore and Dan, I'm sure you can make that work. And, you know, Moore or Morrison, maybe Dan and Morrison wouldn't work if they are both fit. McIntyre, again, I'm not sure. I don't actually know what the best partnership out of all that is. But for now, I'm very happy with Yeardon right mid and Holmes right back, because I think that's the best solution for that. And I apologise that that's not also in the question at all.
I think to answer the question directly, for me, it's McIntyre and someone else. I think McIntyre has the ability to become, future club captain for me. But also the way that he plays, he's just going to grow and grow and grow.
Could you play McIntyre and Dan? Because they're both left-footed, aren't they?
I personally wouldn't do that. No, the problem is that with Morrison, because we haven't really talked about him, have we? I don't think we'll see him again in a Reading shirt playing, to be honest. I just don't think he, you know, when he gets back or whatever, I just don't think that he will be, the same player. So I think his days are unfortunately numbered with the club. Moore, I mean, I don't want to go into that really, because it's just easy. It becomes like the new Chris Gunter, doesn't he? And it's never a nice conversation to have. With Scott Dan, you know, the thing is, yeah, okay, his defending hasn't been great, but he's chipping with goals. So you think, well, if we've got another goal threat in the team, that's kind of what we need, really. You know, I suppose the bigger conversation as well is what happens with the goalkeepers, because it looks like Southwood's shirt for the foreseeable future. And he kind of, as we've said time and again, he's kind of settled things down back there. But for me to answer that question, it's McIntyre and someone else. Whether or not that someone else is a new person coming in at the end of this season or the start of next, don't know. But I don't think that central defence will look like that next year. You know, if Dan stays, maybe he's a starter for next year as well. But yeah, it's McIntyre and someone else for me.
God, I don't even want to think about what the team's going to look like next year. I think it's a fair point. I think McIntyre, I think that the most talented ones are probably Moore and Dan, but in reality, yeah, I'm not sure it's quite working just at the moment. It's telling that Moore was obviously sacrificed for the substitution. Ricardo then with the final question of the podcast, he said, is Paulo off to Old Trafford? He can't get away from Man United in the news at the best of times, least of all today, I guess. And I think that maybe Paunovic isn't the man we should be worried about, because, you know, though after an interim manager to the end of the season, that's probably when they'll go for Paunovic. Perhaps United are going to, you know, stick to their roots and go for a former championship winning player for United, you know, from the old glory days. And Quinton Fortune is the man we've got to be looking after.
Interesting if John O'Shea or Paul McShane crop up with this, whatever they're trying to do up there, really. I just kind of going back onto Pane, obviously, like everyone else, his contract's up at the end of this year. And I can't remember where it was, but someone made a point about whether or not you'd get him a contract extension in January. And that kind of got me thinking, well, maybe he doesn't want to stay. Maybe he's had enough of this absolute show. You know, he's been hung out to dry on so many occasions. He's taken kind of waves of criticism from the fan base in kind of different spells. Maybe he just goes, you know what, I'm bad enough. I just want to go and manage somewhere else, really. Obviously he's not going to Old Trafford. I mean, it's quite amusing to think that he might end up somewhere like that. But I just hope he stays, to be honest. I think, as we said time and again, I think he's done a great job, really, under very difficult circumstances. And now with the business plan laid out, hopefully that's going to give him some kind of sensible parameters and the club to move forward. It'd be interesting if they went after Fortune, wouldn't it, really? He would be quite a calming influence up there, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Fits the bill, doesn't he? I'm not going to build this out into a discussion now, but I suppose the Paunovic question for the end of the year, in my mind, I guess he'd probably need like a third or fourth season at Reading to really build his career, because at the moment he's just kind of, I guess if he was to finish mid-table with us this year, he wouldn't really be known as anything in particular, if you know what I mean. Whereas you look at someone like Jose Gomez, who's moved on and has effectively just, it's not really advanced his career massively being at Reading, has it? I guess, you know, he had a couple of shots in Spain and stuff, but yeah, maybe not. I don't think the time is right for Paolo to be thinking about moving on, but I know that's not something that anyone's worried about for now. A question for another day. Let's answer plenty of questions for today still to come. There'll be your News Bites next up.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
So we are just going to briefly touch on the topic of the 6-point deduction. We've had a podcast already go out on this. Ollie in the week spoke with the Price of Football's Kieran Maguire on the entire situation, getting into the nitty-gritty detail of the numbers and, you know, all the rest of it and what's the EFL are doing, what's coming next, et cetera, et cetera. For me, Ben, at the moment, I just have there were just some questions in my mind, I guess. Do we still have a transfer embargo on us? Probably do. When do we kind of get out of it? Is there something agreed with the EFL in terms of when we break free from this all, and you know, what happens when we got no players left because they've all left at the end of the season for being out of contract? I suppose there were just questions still in my mind over it. But ultimately, I mean, 6 points, it obviously could prove to make or break our season, or it could prove to be practically meaningless, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, personally, for me, I think it's going to be the latter. I mean, looking at the table now, there are clubs in worse position than us and they've not had a points deduction. So I generally feel like we've got enough to stay in the league and for it to not matter too much, really. You know, if we were cut adrift like Derby, yeah, alarm bells would be ringing, but we're not. It doesn't appear that there's going to be any more points deduction this season. So we know where we're at. I suppose, you know, the arrogant fan in me is a bit like, well, what happens next year if we're kind of in and around the playoffs, and then they go, well, it's another minus six and drop out, or, you know, even better, kind of automatic promotion spots. But that's for next season, really. I guess, you know, now even more so, some of those players will leave in the summer, and that will kind of release some of the wage cap, really, for us to kind of sink back into the club. But I just, you know, can you ever be pleased with points deduction? Probably not. Is it embarrassing? Yeah. Is it kind of a bit stomach churning in parts? Absolutely. But, you know, six points based on what we all kind of felt it was going to be, you know, 9, 12 points, whatever was being touted, is a great outcome for us. You know, as the club said, it is kind of a just punishment, and it that's what we need to look at. It's a punishment. We've just got to get our house in order now. You know, we've spent, what was it, lost 57.8 million over 4 years. I mean, it's just an outrageous amount of money, really. It's got us nowhere. We're still in the same position league wise. You know, we've not got any real tangible assets that we can sell for that. You know, the ones that we have gone on a free or for 8 million in the case of Elise. So, you know, we don't have a huge amount of players that we can shift on for big amount of money, really. So it has been a concern, but I just feel kind of almost relieved that it's out the way. You know, the business plan is the business plan. We have to be sensible now because we know what happens if we don't. And it's kind of, we have to trust, and this is where it becomes difficult for us fans. We have to trust the people in charge of the club to make sensible decisions and to stop that kind of short-term, you know, nonsensical spending that's got us into this mess. You know, it is what it is. I think we've got enough to get back up the league. Realistically, where we end up in that league, I honestly don't know. I think I've chopped and changed my expectations so much in the last few months. But for now, you know, I'd settle to stay in the league and to be mid-table. Anything more than that is in my mind, an absolute bonus. But I just hope that the fact that we've got so many loan players won't hinder the kind of the desire and the hunger of the team to get up the table and improve the league position as quickly as possible. You know, we've got a core of players that will stay because they're under contract. But, you know, that's balanced with the fact that a lot of them are due to leave. So I'm really hoping that the togetherness is still there and we're able to, as I said, to move up the table quickly.
Yeah, on that point on the anger, I think the Reading fans have been angry for years about the profligate spending, the letting go of academy talent who have gone and done well elsewhere, the poor contracts that have been handed out. And therefore, to come and say, you've got a points deduction for these things, we know that we've been bad. We're angry about it, that we spent bad money on Aluko, Baldock, Puskas, whatever. You can name probably four or five more players. So I think that's probably the element of Reading not being angry about it as fans, is because we're not shocked. We're not surprised. It's not come out of the blue. And it's also, it's the opposite to Derby, because Derby's is because their owners effectively stops putting the money in and all that sort of stuff, or doesn't have the money to put in. Our owner has put in too much money. And speaking of which, our owner Dai Yong was at the game on Saturday. I think it was his first game since COVID that he's attended, and he was there. Credit to Jonathan Lowe, the Berkshire Live reporter, who filmed him running up and down the touchline after the game, basically just having a good old time with his mates at the football club he owns. And I suppose in a way, I'm not going to draw any massive comparisons and say that's not a man who's going to pull out of the team, but the club have said that he's very clear, or that the club have been very clear that he's still committed, and they really wanted to make that clear in the statement that they put out. And ultimately, we just have to take their word at that and hope that, you know, him running on the pitch is a sign of a man who loves his club.
It's on Jonathan's Twitter, isn't it? But it's a great spot for him. But it's just bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. It's like it's like one of those sports days gone wrong. That's what it looked like to me, like the dad's race at sports day when they all kind of compete and it's just really awkward and cringy. you know, I said in the column, it's either elite trolling of our fan base in the EFL, or it's just the absolute joy of being able to run around on, you know, a fantastic looking pitch in the middle of Berkshire. I don't know what it is. It was just bizarre, absolutely bizarre. you know, as you said, and as I've said, we have to trust the club now. And I think the key word there is trust. And it's the unknown, because he did speak in the week, and really he didn't have a choice, because I think if he hadn't, there would have been some even more serious questions asked him. You know, there's still a proportion of our fan base that still want to be angry and want to tell other fans to be angry. But in my view, what's the point? Like, it's done now. He clearly was saying he wants to be there. He owns a lot of the assets that we have as a club, and he's kind of put a lot of money into the background side of it. And now, you know, we've just got to accept it, move on. I don't mean accept it as in, you know, kind of be naive to it, but there's nothing we can do as fans. We, you know, we could go down the hideous route of kind of campaigning to try and get him out, but who would want to buy the club in the current situation? He said he wants to be there. We do have to kind of trust him, because we've got no other choice. And I think for some fans that is difficult, because they always like that element of choice, but there is none right now for us. So we've got what we've got. We've got the team that we've got the manager we've got, and we have to move on. He wants to move on. He said in a statement this week that he's determined to kind of learn from the errors and the mistakes that have been made. I think someone needs to get around him quite quickly that has a very sound football knowledge of how it works in this country and in this league, because he's clearly surrounded himself with what I would personally deem to be the wrong individuals that have made knee-jerk decisions that have not helped the club at all. I kind of understand where they were coming from with the Gourlay appointment, but unfortunately backed the wrong person to do that, and effectively destroyed the ethos and the community side of the club. And we're still recovering from that. So, you know, he has tried to put these things in place. He's just made terrible decisions doing it. So we have to now trust that there's going to be a little bit more of a rejig of those backroom staff. Talked about the director of football to death as well on this podcast and in articles that we've done. Time will tell as to whether or not they go down that road again, but he needs support. He needs football people around him that understand how it works in this country, what to do and what not to do, and to kind of manage it day to day for him when he's not around. That's really, for me, what I want to see. And that would be an indication of this kind of points deduction working in our favour, and actually us learning from the mistakes as he said he wants to do.
Yeah, ultimately I think that's all fair point. And in terms of putting football people around him, there was an article in The Athletic in the week about the situation. It's basically, I mean, it's said that Keir Drachman, the agent, has been beyond integral to our transfer policy, which isn't, I mean, that is something I'm not happy about, just generally speaking, because I don't think that there have been incredibly few examples of clubs that have been successful in trusting all their transfer business to one agent. Especially when you think about, just practically speaking, how narrow the pool of players you can select from. Whether it's true or not, I mean, I think that the club would probably deny it. That Athletic piece was a little bit too damning in my mind, but there we go. It is what it is, and we'll see how it goes for the next. I guess January is really the next time that we can talk about it, because it's just playing football now. And then in January, we'll find out which of the players who are out of contract that we're going to sell. Some sort of miracle if we can put together some new contracts before then, and what we can do if we are able to bring in or, you know, otherwise players to do something about the squad. So, you know, I guess it is what it is, and Reading can just play football now. Until then, let's talk about the other clubs, or the other teams rather, around Reading Football Club this week. Since we've been off the international break, there's been lots of women's football and lots of very good results for the women's team. They beat Birmingham 3-0. That was shortly after the men's team won at Birmingham. They came from 2-0 down to draw against West Ham. They beat Palace in the Cup. And on Sunday, they beat Brighton 2-0 in the WSL. So they're seventh in the table. It's actually a very congested mid-table. Third place is not that far away for Reading, which would be an amazing result. Teams like Man City, Man United, right in that mire as well. However, Chelsea aren't in that mire. They're right in the title race with Arsenal at the moment. And Reading women play Chelsea on December the 11th on Sky Sports next up. That's an 11:30 a.m. kickoff. We'll remind you about that a bit close to the time as well, because there's obviously I think the international break for the women is kicking off again soon. Under 23s, they've got West Brom on Monday, having lost 2-1 to Derby in the Premier League Cup. And the under 18s, they've got Blackburn on Saturday, having beaten Birmingham 3-1
last time out, another win over Birmingham for the Reading teams. I'd like to see that. So they pushed a bit clear of the bottom two in kind of, you know, the Premier League South stakes of the under-18s, but it's not been a great season, but that was a win on the board against the team that were next to bottom, I think, looking at the table. So if you want to check out the reports, we've got a report of the Derby game up and the Reading women game on the tylerstend.com. So do go and read up on those for a bit more in-depth knowledge on that. Let's go into Big Match Preview then to talk about the next game, the senior men's team.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right then, 8 p.m. Tuesday, November 23rd at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. It is Sheffield United. It's on Sky Sports Arena as well. It's a televised game, this. A team that have won one, drawn one, lost three of their last six. Sheffield United, they were actually on telly again on Saturday. They drew 0-0 at home to Coventry. And I mean, I only watched the first half because obviously going out to watch the Reading game, but I just found them so underwhelming. They were very much second best against the Coventry team. And therefore, I mean, Forest won really good form and we arguably outplayed them. This is a team that's on worse form. It's a bigger chance to win, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that, and I mean this quite respectfully, but they're an absolute shambles, to be honest. I was... Bizarrely, I've got a friend up in Sheffield and we went to the game in late August. They're playing Huddersfield. You know, there's people around us and they only wanted the manager gone, and this was sort of August time. So it's a surprise that he's still in the job, to be honest. You know, obviously got Brewster, they've spent a lot of money on, he can't get in the team at the moment. They're not going anywhere very quickly. They've got like 5 points from the last six games. And it, as you say, the form is dreadful. You know, they're only a couple of points off where we are and we've had a points deduction, so you don't expect them to be challenging particularly well this season. I would imagine that if their form continues, then he will probably be the next manager to go, because they, you know, that with the squad they've got and the money that they still have, they should be higher up really. So they've not been playing well at all this season, and on paper it should be a game that we win. You know, based on the form and everything else. The problem, the thing that concerns me is that we're on Sky and it's live rather than the red button. And that's a problem for me because we never do particularly well when we're on Sky. So I'm hoping that we can put in a performance and start to sort of move that hoodoo away from us, really.
Any changes to the 11, sorry? Is Big Bad Andy going to start?
If he's fit enough. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if he's not, I'd like to see him come on earlier. If the game isn't going in our favour, naturally, I don't see any changes occurring there. I mean, maybe you could bring in Deli Bashiri for Drinkwater. Didn't have a particularly good game yesterday in my mind, Drinkwater. But you know, at some point you have to work with the 11 that you've got and go, this is our strongest 11 at the moment, and we stick with that, and this is how we do it. I hope Paolo would have seen enough to consider trying to play the two up front earlier, if not from the start. But it's so difficult with these games coming thick and fast now. I mean, we've got a lot of games in December. It's absolute carnage on the fixture list. So you have to kind of build those rest breaks into some of our older players that have seen a lot of football this year. I think for me, it's going to be more interesting to see how we set up from a formation point of view rather than the players that are playing. But I really want us to attack this one and really go for it, because you know that would give us 4 points from two games, and that's a pretty good return based on where we are at the moment. Having said all that, we're probably going to lose now. So it's just like it's one of those, really. But we really need to win this game. We really need to start getting those points back. To me, Sheffield United in midweek, they've got a long way to travel as well. Probably is not a bad game to get that ball rolling.
No, I agree. I think, I would actually just go with the same, unless there's any injury returnees or something. Maybe you could put Deli Bashir in the midfield for someone like Lauren, but I don't think you want to be doing that just off the, you know, I don't think he's necessarily earned that chance to jump up just yet, given how he was off the bench. Deli Bashir wasn't brilliant. So I would go with the same 11 and the same tactics. I was quite a fan of the 4-5-1, sort of 4-1-4-1 deal. for this setup. Carroll, I don't think it's a wise idea to throw him in for 90 minutes now, mainly on two fronts, partly because of the fitness issue and partly because if he can only do 60 minutes or 70 minutes, we don't actually have anyone on the bench to bring on for him for, you know, to give him that rest at the end. So unless you can guarantee 90 minutes out of him, I wouldn't start him just yet.
And I was going to say, I mean, I think the bench is going to be interesting. If Halilovic is back in contention, he will probably go straight into the, onto the bench. Winamata, maybe. Obviously, we were told sort of end of last week that he was a little bit further away. But, you know, this game might be the one where he comes back into the squad. So the bench is going to be interesting, and that becomes a little bit easier because you drop out sort of the younger players that have been filling in there, really. But Halilovic is probably the only question mark in terms of the fitness levels and whether or not he can come back in and play some part in the game on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I'd be for that. Maybe even someone like a Jaria that he would come in for, or Yeardom, and then, you know, knock Yeardom into right back, I guess, is probably the most realistic scenario with that one. Let's talk predictions then to round off the show. Westy and Adam both claimed 1-1 draws for the Forest game. Ollie took a 0-0, so he got a point. So Westy on top with 20 points. Adam's on 15. He's got a few good results recently. Ollie 14, Handbags 10, Benyu on 7, then me and Sim on 6. I mean, as I said, we'd win 1-0 on Saturday, so that went pretty quickly.
yeah, I went for a nil as well. I think I went 2-0. That's tight in that the middle lower part, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the battle for fifth is real strong, isn't it?
Who's above me? Someone on 10, is it?
Yeah, Handbags on 10. Yeah, I mean,
it's a bit of a leap.
I'm going to go 1-0 again this time. I'm going to maintain the 1-0 bandwagon because I think that Sheffield United, they've not been a huge amount of goals in their games recently. And I think if we score first, I've got a very, you know, very hopeful that we'll see it over the line.
I'm going to go 2-0, but I will say that I know that Carroll is scoring this game 100%. Unless, of course, he gets injured between now and Tuesday night. Hopefully he doesn't. But I think we're winning 2-0. Carroll's getting on the score sheet with at least one.
Lovely. Well, definitely take that. And thank you very much, Ben, for popping onto the show this evening.
Absolute pleasure. Let's hope for a win on Tuesday, and then Swansea away, isn't it, on Saturday? So, you know, busy week for Reading. But fingers crossed we get some points on the board.
That's how we like it. Nice and busy. There's always something to be interested in as a Reading fan. Always something going on, isn't there? Not always for the better, but let's hope that this week is a reminder of the 3 points on the board and the away days and all that sort of stuff that we actually do support the team for, rather than just being one kind of silly meme, which we've kind of descended into at times this week. Still, a point on the board against Forest isn't the worst thing in the world, especially if we can go and back it up with 3 against Sheffield United, 8 p.m. on Tuesday, that is Sky Sports Arena as well. We'll be back after the Swansea game on Saturday, hopefully talking about that 6-point deduction being wiped off the face of the planet. Until then, come on, you ass. It's like-